Well, the Brexit situation drags on. There's no complete resolution to the Brexit. Remember many, many months ago last summer, the Brexit plebiscite took place in Great Britain, and it was really divided. It wound up when everything was, well, in the aggregate, let's say, it was 52-48 in favor of leaving the European Union. When you broke down the vote, it was really divided. Northern Ireland wanted to stay. Scotland wanted to stay. Both of those votes were very decisive. London wanted to stay in the decisive vote. But when all the votes were counted, 52-48 in favor of leaving the European Union, the problem was that actually leaving the European Union was dependent on a process. And it's a process, what are we now, 7 months later? It's a process that is still going on. And that is triggering Article 50, which is the exit clause for members of the European Union. And that is what would actually start the process of Brexit, which is a negotiating period of about 2 years where new arrangements have to be hammered out. Now, here we are at the end of January. We're like 7-8 months post-Brexit vote. And Article 50 has still not been implemented. Now, on top of that, the British Supreme Court has voted this month 8-3, an overwhelming vote, that in order for the United Kingdom to leave the European Union, it will require a vote by Parliament. Now, is it likely that Parliament would vote to overturn the results of the plebiscite? It's not likely. Is it expected? It's not expected. Now, anything is possible, of course. But where we stand right now, Prime Minister Theresa May, who was in the United States this week, has established a deadline of the 31st of March for triggering Article 50. But there's something interesting about the 130-word statement that Parliament is going to be arguing about and voting on eventually. And that is that the wording of the bill presented to Parliament does not state the March 31 deadline. Now, what does this mean? Well, you could fill in the blanks, but it's not over till it's over. And in the case of Brexit, it's not over until Article 50 is implemented. So we'll see where all of that plays out. But the way things stand right now, it looks like Parliament will have a limited amount of time. Prime Minister Theresa May is suggesting a maximum of 5 days of debate. But it's hard to say whether that will hold, because it is possible to propose amendments, and it is possible to go back and forth in Parliament. So we'll have to see how it plays out. But as of right now, the Prime Minister is on board for Brexit. Parliament is expected to vote in favor of Brexit, although we will have to count the votes on that one. And once that happens, they can implement Article 50 and they can begin what is about a 2-year process of negotiating future trade terms. So we'll see how that plays out. Should be interesting in any case. Now, this is a big deal also, because in spring of this year, France is going to have a major election. It's a little bit early to say how that's going to play out. And then later this year, in the summer, late summer, Germany is going to have a major election. So it's going to be a very busy year, 2017, politically in Europe. And we'll see how that plays out as well. Also this week, we saw that the United States has dropped any plan to join the Trans-Pacific Partnership. a very good week for China. This paves the way now for China to become the dominant trading partner in the Asian theater. I would say probably from the standpoint of the United States export account, the U.S. export account in Asia will probably be challenged. This will probably be a headwind for U.S. exports to Asia, not being part of the Trans-Pacific Partnership opens the door for China to dominate the Asian theater over the long-term future in terms of trade. So I'm sure they were celebrating that decision in Beijing this week. Our toll-free line, 1-800-934-2221. That is our contact number, 1-800-934-2221. Let's get Bill on the line in the Nutmeg State. Hello, Bill.
Yes. Yes. Let me turn my radio down, Bob.
Yes, please. Appreciate that
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I've got a question. I'm about 3 years away from retirement, and I've done, like you've said, I've put as much as I could in the 401k plan, and it's been about 35 to 38 years, and I've got all company stock, and it's worth about $2.5 million. And my question is, I'm retiring in 3 years. I'd like an exit strategy. And I sort of, I read something called net unrealized appreciation. I read something about that. And I got to admit, I'm not well versed on how to make that happen.
So this is a 401k, right?
Yes, sir.
And this $2.5 million, is that the lion's share of your net worth?
No, I have some real estate.
Oh, okay.
Our current house that we're in, we have virtually no debt.
Well, that's good, but I just, you know, let me ask you this. What percentage of your net worth is represented by the money you have in your company's stock?
Probably 60%.
Are you comfortable with that?
You mean my overall net worth? To my overall net worth, or
are you comfortable with 60% of your net worth in one stock?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, I would not be either. Actually, the guideline I use is about 4%, so you're about 15 times that.
I'm in a very risky situation right now. I understand that, and I've got to do something.
Let me ask you a question. Is that the only thing you're allowed to own in your 401k? Or, for example, are you allowed to own the S&P 500 or the total market?
Yes, I am. It's through a Fidelity.
Fidelity has the Fidelity Spartan total stock market. They also have the Fidelity Spartan S&P 500. For diversification, I would lean to the total stock market. I need to ask you a question because this is very puzzling to me. You're in a situation where you've done very, very well, and you've amassed a tremendous amount of money in your 401k, albeit in one stock. And yet, since you're in a tax-privileged account, it would appear that at the stroke of a pen, you could simply switch with no tax consequence whatsoever at this time. You could simply switch into the Fidelity Spartan Total Stock Market Index, have a highly diversified, very, very low-cost portfolio, and be rid of all of this specific stock risk. And I guess I don't understand why you would not do that.
I think the way that it's handled through Fidelity right now, they give us four or five different options to choose from, of which one of them is company stock. And the other, I would have to sell all the stock, convert it to cash, and then move it into a, they have some kind of like a brokerage account. And
yeah,
I could keep it in there.
But there are no tax consequences of doing such in a 401k. And by doing that, now let me ask you another question, because if this is a concern, then that has to be covered as well. Let's see. Let me ask it this way. How many shares of the stock do you own?
13,000 shares.
13,000 shares, which means the stock is a $200 stock.
Yes.
Now, is this a stock that trades like water, or is does this one trade by appointment? Does it have high average daily volume? What's the situation?
I think it has a decent average volume.
So therefore, liquidating 13,000 shares, let's say over a period of a week, at the rate of a couple of thousand shares a day, 2,600 shares a day for 5 days. That would be the end of the position. It would be gone. Or do you think that would have market impact?
I'm not sure, but the I mean, I'm not an executive in the company where they have to provide that to.
Well, that's not, I'm not asking you about that. I'm asking you about market impact. So if you were to sell a couple of thousand shares a day over a period of a week, that would that have much market impact? Does this thing trade by appointment, or does is it reasonably liquid?
Oh, no, it would be reasonably liquid. There wouldn't be a problem with that.
All right, so that would be no problem. So it would be possible for you to liquidate the position or at least over a period of a few days, at or near the current market value, and that would convert the money to cash, which you could then invest in the Fidelity Spartan Total Stock Market Index, for example. You would then still have your market position, but it would be a different market position. Instead of being dependent on the fortunes of one company, it would be a highly diversified holding of a large number of companies, greatly diversified. I want to ask you, I mean, this is such a no-brainer for me that I can't even find the words to tell you. Why wouldn't you just be calling me to tell me, and I appreciate your call very much, I appreciate this discussion very much, why wouldn't you just be calling me and saying, Bob, this is what I'm planning on doing, what do you think about that, to which I would say, it's a brilliant idea. But instead, you're kind of making it sound like you don't even know if you wanna do it.
Well, I realize I took some risk the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, and that worked out. And God bless you. You've done well. You put the ball in the hole. It's a hole in one, as far as I'm concerned. What I'm suggesting is that you pick up your ball and leave the course with your money, because it seems to me that you are taking a disproportionate amount of risk when you're only going to work another couple of years.
Right.
So, all right, I'll put it this way. For me, this is a no-brainer.
Okay.
I'm not going to, I mean, remember, if I said anything else, I would be in big trouble. I've spent 31 years on this radio cast encouraging people to not have more than about 4% in any one stock. Why? So that they can control specific company risk and specific stock risk. Now, someone that's a couple of years from retirement that has 60% of their net worth in the company stock, I mean, this is a no-brainer.
Yep.
Okay?
Okay.
Hope it works out, Bill.
Thank you.
Take care. Yeah, I mean, there's just no reason to take that risk that I can see at this stage of the game. I mean, to me, to give you a baseball analogy, this would be like I'm ahead 3-0 in the bottom of the ninth, 2 out, nobody on, and I start walking people on purpose until 4 runs come in and I lose. And why would I do that?